Hi, welcome to The Heart of It. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Hart. I'm a clinical psychologist, a wife, a mother of two teenagers, and I've been using alternative medicine for my family and friends for over 30 years. This show is fulfilling my dream of bringing you interviews with experts in the fields of nutrition, alternative methods of healing, and relationships. I want you to have the latest, most practical information to use when you make important decisions that affect your health, heart, and home. My guest today is Dr. Christine Wood. She is a practicing pediatrician and international expert on children's nutritional and environmental issues. She is the author of How to Get Kids to Eat Great and Love It, which is in its second printing, which doesn't surprise me. This book is one that I find myself referring to again and again because it is designed to answer nearly every question about children's nutrition. And what I really like is that she also shares the research that backs up each of her conclusions and recommendations. Dr. Wood's interviews and articles have been published in numerous magazines, and she was a guest writer for Newsweek's special edition on Your Child. She is a spokesperson for the international nutritional company USANA and is on their medical advisory board, and she serves on the Coalition on Children and Weight in San Diego. And most importantly, she's a wife and a mother of a teenage son, so she knows firsthand what it's like to be in the trenches. Dr. Wood, welcome to The Heart of It.
Oh, thank you, Linda. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here today.
I'm so happy to have you, and thank you for being on. I want to get right to probably one of the most important issues facing children in our society, which is childhood obesity. A recent report in the New England Journal of Medicine said that if the rate of childhood obesity keeps increasing at the rate it is now, then today's children will have a lower life expectancy than adults do now. I'm wondering what you think is contributing to the rate of childhood obesity rising so rapidly.
Oh, I think there's a lot of trends that have occurred over the last several decades, really, that have led to this problem. And certainly one that I'm very concerned about as a practicing pediatrician. I mean, we can look at topics such as the number of snack foods that are out there. There are over 12,000 new processed foods introduced each year into the United States alone. So you can imagine, how many choices that gives you off your grocery shelf.
Yeah.
In addition, you know, if you have kids, you know there's a lot of sedentary activities that they're gravitating to. Television, computers, all the video game setups that are available, these types of things also make physical activity very difficult. And just family lifestyles. Life has really changed. The days of the stay-at-home mom who spent all day cooking and having a nice home-cooked meal. I mean, I don't know about you, Linda, but I remember when I grew up, we went out to eat maybe once every 6 months.
We hardly, it was a big deal when we would go out to eat dinner.
Oh, it was so special. We dressed up, it was a big deal. Now families go out to eat often like 2 to 4 times a week. And the kind of choices that we know we get in restaurants or fast food choices are not always the healthiest choices out there. So all of that adds up to a problem that we need to address.
And so what sort of health problems are associated with childhood obesity then?
Well, there's a lot of concerns from a medical standpoint, and public health officials are very distraught over the trends in childhood obesity and the rise. What we're seeing is that this rate has doubled over the last 10 years, and we're identifying a lot of children now who are developing health problems at younger ages, one of the most dramatic being type 2 diabetes, which in the old days we used to call it adult onset diabetes, but we don't want to call it that anymore because we're seeing it in teenagers and children. And this is the type of diabetes that is generally related to people being overweight, poor lifestyles, poor diets. And what we're starting to see is as these kids are developing this at a young age, unfortunately, their risks of having complications from diabetes as they get into their 20s, 30s, and 40s is extremely high. And certainly we know that their life expectancy will also decline with that. The statistic I read was that a child born today, one out of three of children born today will develop type 2 diabetes in their lifetime.
One out of three.
So this is just a huge public health issue because the cost of health care and to our society is going to be enormous if this trend keeps going. And that's what public health
And are they going to be developing diabetes earlier in life, too?
Exactly.
Yeah, so that they'll have the health problems associated with diabetes earlier in life.
Right, right.
Oh,
so they may be having their kidney failure in their 30s and being on dialysis.
Wow.
And this is a very, very frightening trend if things aren't turned around here. Other, you know, health diseases are things like heart disease. And we know that heart disease starts in childhood. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, that's older people, but I think many of us now know people even in their 30s who have had heart attacks. And I was at a medical conference last year, and one of the speakers there who does a lot on nutrition and risk factors, his quote was that we will start seeing teenagers in emergency rooms presenting with their first heart attacks. And again, not a trend we want to see happen if we can avoid that. And even things like asthma. There's been a lot of research to show that teenagers and overweight children and adults also who are overweight can have a higher tendency for asthma. And just the whole self-esteem and depression. We also know kids who are overweight tend to miss more school, have more absenteeism, and therefore it affects their learning and their ability to function academically. So there's just a wide spectrum of things. I mean, there's more to that, liver and other types of issues that can occur, but it's a very, very difficult health trend, and unfortunately, it's not just a cosmetic issue, and we don't want to focus on it that way particularly, but we want to focus on it that this is a health problem.
It sounds like we could do a whole show just on that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, boy, just that image of a teenager having a heart attack is, I'm reeling from that. What can parents do? Should we try to keep our children more active? Is that one direction to go?
Well, certainly physical activity is a huge risk factor for kids developing more weight. There's been a lot of studies that have showed that children who spend more time on television, on computer, have a higher tendency for being overweight. The other thing I coach parents on is don't put the TV or the computer in the bedroom of your child's bedroom because there's a much higher risk for them to go ahead and use that a little more, you know, freely at that point. And the other thing that I try to encourage parents to do is don't allow your children to snack in front of the TV. If they tend to just have a bag of chips there or crackers or whatever, we tend to eat more. It's sort of that mindless eating that we get into. I mean, I know we've all probably done things like that in our past, but
I was going to say that's not just advice for children, is it?
True. But it's just a good habit. If parents can get into good habits and start those things young and early in life, and that's just the rule, kids learn to accept that. And just making sure that when they eat in a designated area. They're eating in the kitchen or dining room, and that they're not grazing all around the house, and that they're not snacking all the time when they're in the car. I know sometimes that's a difficult one, but I do have some families who it seems like a lot of their meals and snacks occur while they're driving. And again, I think we need to spend, you know, that time to really sit and have meals and try to encourage those family meals as much as possible. We've also discovered that any type of activity practically is more active than sitting in front of the TV or computer games. So if parents can really set limits with that, and what the American Academy of Pediatrics says right now is that the children under 2 should not be watching television. I know that's a hard one probably for a lot of families to swallow. And they also say that combined media time, I call it screen time, not including homework, I kind of exclude that because I know some of the teenagers can get a lot of computer time that they need for homework. but should be limited to about 1 to 2 hours a day. And I really try to encourage families to stick with less than an hour on school nights. I find most families should be able to follow that and to really manage that media time that they get, that screen time, and be very aware of what's going on with that.
Yes. As a mother of a teenage boy, I mean, I when I go to the computer store where they play games, it's all boys in there. It's all teenage boys and young boys, and they just can go hours and hours on those games.
Yeah, it's very captivating, and we just need to educate our kids that this is there's certainly times that maybe they won't need that downtime, and I'm not saying they should never do it, but it just has to be a balance of things in their life.
Well, if we can get our children to be more active, that would be one thing, and then I guess the other side of the equation would be to up their nutrition. And I'm hoping that you have some advice for parents of picky eaters. I mean, it is just, sometimes it is a trick to get children to eat their vegetables, and I hope you have some advice for us about that.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions on that in my practice as far as, what do I do? My kid won't eat, X, Y, or Z. First of all, I think you have to look at them developmentally. So I really try to address this issue based on age. If you have a 1 to 2 year old, and they go through fads of eating, and I try to explain that this is really normal development. Some days they may eat a lot. Some days they may eat just bites when it comes to the meals. Some days they may love carrots and peas, and the next day they turn their nose up to it. And so we have to be pretty flexible with that younger age group as far as what type, how we sort of approach that. We don't want to make it a battle. We don't want to be forcing the little kids to eat. And I generally will tell families between that 1 to 2 age, it is such a key time as far as making sure that they're being introduced to lots of healthful foods. Now, the tendency is we start looking for those packaged easy snack foods, and the little toddlers are eating the crackers and the little, goldfish and just
All
those kind of typical things. And we forget that we need to be introducing lots of fruits and vegetables. I tell my parents, just focus on lots of fruits, vegetables, whole grains from 1 to 2. Try to limit and not really go down the road of too many junk food choices at that age group. They don't need it. They're not really asking for it if it's not around all the time. And you can really create some great habits. And what they show is that by the time a child is age 2, most of their food choices are already set. And so we realize what an important job we have between that important ages of 1 to 2 to try to really get them to make some good choices and introduce that. I mean, even give them foods that you don't like. If you don't like green peppers, try it out on them. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And, you may find your kids love it. So keep that in mind when you're looking at that younger age group. Yeah, as you move up to 2 to 4 or 5, that preschool age, there's, again, they can still go through those phases of loving something, then not liking it. I try to encourage parents by, let's say, 3 or 4, to tell them that, we need to at least try a bite of everything on our plate. Again, we don't want to make this a battle, and if you're feeling like you're in a battle zone over mealtime, there's sometimes some other strategies they'll use at that point. But you will find that a lot of kids will at least try a bite, because what they say is if a kid tries a food, just taste it 10 to 12 times, they may turn around and like it. And I have a story to share with that. My son, who, he loved croutons in the salad. So when he was like 3, 4, I'd always say, well, if you have a bite of croutons, you got to have a bite of salad. So he'd always do that, but of course he'd only eat one bite of salad. And over time, one night, I remember he just suddenly said he wanted more. He ate the whole bowl of salad, the greens and everything, and he said, I want more. And he just learned to like salad at that point, just because he was encouraged to try a bite whenever we had salad with croutons. So, it can work. It can really work.
That's great. I don't think I have time to ask you another question because we'll be going to a break in just a moment. I was going to just offer that one of the tricks that I found works in my family is to have the cut vegetables handy before dinner's ready, and they start munching on those vegetables when they're hungry before they eat.
Right. So, I call that your environmental controls. around will be eaten generally. And if it's not around, good. It usually won't.
One thing that we have to talk about is fast food and eating out, because this is such a strong trend, and we know it's not healthy, but it's a part of life now, it seems. And I was just wondering, you know, what you could offer us in the way of advice about that.
Yeah, it is a huge trend. It's a huge change in our culture and the direction that our whole society has gone. And there are a few things to keep in mind. When my son was growing up, when he was little, we just never made it a habit to go through the type of typical fast food drive-through places. He just never grew up with that. And it's interesting, as he never grew up with that, he never really asked for it. And so I think, again, the lesson being that what you start out at a young age as far as coaching your children can be very important. Now, of course, if your kids are older and you've already been down that road and you're thinking, okay, now what am I going to do about this? You know, I think some of the lessons that can be taken here are, first of all, within just about any restaurant now, you can often find healthier choices. And trying to encourage kids not to do the supersizing and the bigger sodas and all that type of thing can be just a small little thing that families can do and be aware of. The other thing to realize is that there are a lot of, I guess you could call them still fast food, but they're much healthier choices. They might have, like, roasted chicken, or it might be a fish taco place that has grilled fish. And so we can find healthier choices around us when we start to really look. And I do know, because of the trends of obesity that have been developing, there certainly is a lot more attention by the restaurant industry to sort of pay attention to this and to perhaps start. I'm seeing changes. I don't know if you're seeing that, Linda, but I feel like a lot of the menus are starting to look a little better.
I've just been so, so pleased about that. I think that movie, Supersize Me, might have made a dent.
Yes, and I tell parents, watch that with your kids. Let them see the messages that movie, you know, gives. And my son watched it, and although we're not fast food people, I mean, it made an impression on him. It definitely made an impression on him. And
it does. It was a great, I was so glad that movie was made.
Right, right.
And you know, another aspect of this is that, like you said, both parents are often working these days. And I think that contributes to the fast food trend, because it just takes so much time to shop and cook and clean up after. And I even read one study that they're doing at UCLA where they found that usually there's one parent that has already left for work in the morning, and there's one parent that is in charge of breakfast and lunches that day for the children. And I was wondering, you know, just what suggestions you would have. I'm always looking for ideas of what to send with my children for lunch,
right,
especially.
Yeah, I tell families, try some leftovers that you had from dinner before. If you had some grilled chicken, roll that up in a tortilla, and you can use one of the little cold packs. You know, put
oh, that's a great idea.
Pasta salad. That travels really well. Just a cold pasta salad with some grated carrots or peas on it, a little olive oil or some sort of dressing on it. That's an easy thing. I know peanut butter and jelly is a pretty solid staple for a lot of kids, and it's really not a bad choice. The peanuts have a good fat, a monosaturated fat, and if you get the jelly or jams, it's more 100% fruit. You could also use a little bit of honey and bananas to make it a little bit, a little bit healthier, so you can try some things like that to mix it up. Or even send a little thing of peanut butter or almond butter or cashew butter with some cut-up apples and have them just dip that, or celery, and have them use that as their main lunch meal.
Yeah, my daughter loves almond butter.
Yeah, those are really good choices also. So I think by looking for things, I really try to help families stay away from the nitrate-laden lunch meats. There's been research to show that the nitrates may have some cancerous effects. There was a study done, I think it was at UCLA, where kids who ate a lot of hot dogs tended to have higher risks of cancer. So that is something that we want to be aware of when we're looking at the kind of choices that we're buying for our kids. And a lot of the health food type stores around here now have nitrate-free lunch meat. So you can get turkey that doesn't have nitrates in it. So you've
can you get that in your regular grocery store, or do you have to go to the health food store to find that?
You usually have to go to a health food store for that.
Okay. Okay, but it is available.
It is, yes, yes.
That would be worth looking for.
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess you could buy it and put it in the freezer and have it handy, you know, if you can't shop at the health food store that often or if it's inconvenient.
Right, and they even have nitrate-free hot dogs, too. I do say they taste a little different. So for your kids who are on the old hot dogs, it might be a little harder sell. But when I did hot dogs, I didn't do them very often. That's what I bought. When my son was young, he didn't know any different, so he ate them.
That's great.
Yeah.
And how about breakfast?
Oh, that's a good topic, especially with the kids starting back at school.
Yeah.
One of the things that has been looked at is the whole pattern of skipping breakfast. What we see is that especially with teen girls, there's a very high risk of them skipping breakfast. I think they said among nine-year-olds, 75% will eat breakfast every day. By the time those girls are 19, less than 30% are eating breakfast every day. And we know that starting out with breakfast is extremely important for their academic achievement. And studies have shown that by skipping breakfast, they're going to have poor concentration, poor attention, and they may perform less well on testing. So it's extremely important that parents try to get kids to have breakfast. And things I'll have parents do, why don't they make like a little parfait of fruit and yogurt? You can put some cereal in there to kind of crunch it up a little bit. I use these Kashi bars. You can crunch those up or break them up. And the Kashi bars, they've got a new one that's got flax and almonds. It's very, very good, very healthy, low sugar. If you're looking for cereals, my tricks are try to find something that's less than 6 grams of sugar. That's going to be a lot healthier. And if your kids are really onto those high-sugar cereals, you might want to see if you can compromise and maybe
okay.
get a healthier one with a less healthy one. And at least
all right.
doing a little
and,
bit there.
We need to go to a break. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Well, maybe we can continue after the break. Dr. Wood, we were so busy talking on this last segment that I didn't have a chance to have you say your contact information because I know that people are going to be interested in finding, you know, your book and in contacting you, and I thought you'd like to give that information. Maybe we should do that at the beginning of this segment.
Sure, yeah. My website is kids, KIDSEAT, great, all one word, kidseatgreat.com, and people can contact me through there. And I have my book available there, and I will sign it for you so people can order online, and that's the easiest way to get through to me, kidseatgreat.com.
Okay, that's great. And if they forget, they can also go to my website, and I have your contact information on my website also, theheartofit.com. So did you want to say more about breakfast ideas then?
You seem to have
all sorts of ideas there.
I know. We talked about the cereals. The other thing is just trying to do things. You can even do a little toast with peanut butter and bananas on it. Some kids like hummus. You could use that on bagels. So look for other ideas and really try to encourage fruit with your breakfast.
Now, you didn't say anything about eggs. Was that intentional?
Yeah. No, eggs are fine, too. You could
they are okay.
Use eggs, yeah. I like the omega-3 eggs. And those are enriched with the omega-3 fats, and you can get those. In our area here, I'm seeing it a lot at the regular grocery stores. Some areas around the country, you may have to look at a health food store. You know, but I'll tell people, if you start asking at your regular grocery store for things, and they start hearing from different people that this is what we'd like omega-3 enriched eggs, they'll usually cater to that. So ask your grocer and talk to the manager and see what you can do about things like that.
Okay. And another area, well, you just brought up omega-3 fats. Maybe this would be a good time to talk about that
yeah,
and explain
I,
to my
I
listeners what they
fats.
Are and why they're important.
Yeah, I started doing a lot of research and reading on this probably 10 years ago. And, you know, here I am. I'm a practicing physician. I'm looking at medical articles written about omega-3 fats, and I'm thinking to myself, why didn't I learn that in medical school? Why didn't I learn that during my residency? This looks like sort of important stuff. It's an important nutrient. It's something that many of us are missing. They estimate that 20% of us have no omega-3 fats on board. And this is an essential fat. In other words, our body doesn't make it. We have to get it.
Do you mean we're not eating any foods with omega-3s,
well,
or that we don't have them in our bodies?
Yeah, 20% of people are not getting any foods with omega-3 fats. And
wow.
So they have undetectable levels. So it's something you have to get from your diet. And there's a few things that people think of when we're talking about these good fats, and this is the docosahexaenoic acid is the particular one, which is an omega-3 fat. Generally, get it in fatty fish. You can also get it in certain nuts like walnuts, walnut oil, flax, flaxseed, flaxseed oil. You can get it in some of the other types of oils. There's some in canola oil also. But as you can see, it may be tough, especially for kids, because I question kids all the time about their eating. And I don't find a lot of kids are big fish eaters. Mm. And the other side on that, too, which we can go into maybe a little later, is the environmental problems now with fish and the mercury issue, which we can certainly touch on. But
yeah.
These omega-3 fats are so important for, one, your immune system. They're very important for cardiovascular health. There's been a lot of research out there showing that this fat is extremely important and may help reduce your risk of heart disease or blood pressure problems, or it may be important and an important way to help manage cholesterol levels. So extremely.
And I think I've heard that it's important for brain development, isn't it, in children?
Yep, and I do a lot of lecturing at medical conferences on this because this is one of the things with breast milk. It is in breast milk, but it's very dependent on mom's diet.
Mm.
So mom has to get it in her diet in order for it to show up in her breast milk or while she's pregnant. And the baby will really start to collect all these omega-3 fats during pregnancy and while breastfeeding. A few years ago, they did add this fat into our infant formula line. So that was a real positive move, I think, nutritionally. But this fat is extremely important. And this is one of the reasons that is felt that the breastfed babies are smarter, is because these fats, these good fats, are very important, and studies have shown that it may improve mental development in infants and IQ, et cetera. So extremely important fat if you're going to become pregnant, thinking of being pregnant, and certainly if you're breastfeeding. And ways I get it into kids, you can use a little flax oil and put it in yogurt or mix it in a smoothie. You can't cook with it, but you can add it into already cooked food. So as an example, I stick it in our salad dressing and just add a little bit in with the salad, or you can just put it over already cooked pasta or vegetables or something. So these are easy ways to get the oil in. Adults obviously can swallow the capsules, the fish oil capsules, and you do want to make sure, though, that if they're fish oil capsules, that they're pharmaceutical grade and that they also are distilled. Because there's been a few reports of toxins in some of those fish oil capsules out there, too. So it's like we can't get away from it. So
Yeah.
And there's even been studies on the omega-3s and attention deficit disorder and using it to treat things like mild depression. So it's extremely important in brain and neurologic function. So I think it's one of those missing nutrients that's not talked about as much, although I do find a lot more people are aware of it today.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And you mentioned attention deficit disorder, which also, of course, would have to be related to the brain functioning that this may be related to. I know you were mentioning, I tend to love flaxseed oil in salad dressing. We have that at home a lot, and I think my children certainly liked it. And I like it also on rice with a little garlic salt.
That's
great, just a little cooked rice with oil. Instead of the butter that maybe some people are still using. My goodness, these breaks seem to be coming on so fast. I'm going to have you on again, Dr. Wood, to talk some more. We do have one more segment. We have a lot of information to cover. we'll be talking about, maybe we should get to actually, you know, what vitamins you recommend for your patients to take.
We can talk about
and
that.
And maybe we'll even touch on chemicals like parabens that can enter our children's systems without in ways other than food. We'll be back in just a moment for more of The Heart of It with Dr. Wood. Welcome back to The Heart of It with Dr. Christine Wood, a specialist in the nutritional and environmental aspects of disease in children and an international expert on this subject. We were just talking about the omega-3 fats and how important they are and how difficult they are to get into our children's diets because they aren't so inclined to eat walnuts and flax it's hard to get them to eat the fish. And so I'd like you to, maybe we should talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, the environment.
About how they can get these omega-3 fats into their diet.
Yeah, as far as how to do it, I mean, the flax, and if they like nuts, you can do that. Another trick is use flaxseed. Just flaxseed, you do have to grind them up to release the omega-3s. And what you do is you can cook with it. You can add it. I had a patient bring me flaxseed cookies that were really good.
Oh.
A little flaxseed in them and ground those up. And they do sell things like flaxseed meal, which is already ground up. And, again, you can put that in muffins or pancake batter and things like that. So there's
you
can
throw them into a smoothie, too.
Yeah, you can put all that stuff into a smoothie.
Yeah, it's a good way to sneak it in.
Right, and the flax oil goes really nicely into a smoothie also. So those are some good ways to get that in there.
But are you concerned at all about the environmental toxins? Because I know I've read it's about the mercury levels in fish lately, and I was buying a lot of salmon and different fish for our family, and now I thought, oh, no, I don't want the mercury to be an issue, and so now I'm really confused.
Yeah. The mercury has certainly started to raise some questions about safety of fish, and the FDA did come out with a statement to say that pregnant and breastfeeding women should stay away from certain species of fish, primarily sharks, swordfish, tilefish, and king mackerel. And also limited amounts of certain other fatty fish, as an example, tuna. Just as one tip, light tuna, the light canned tuna, has less mercury in it than the white albacore tuna. So you could eat a little more of the light tuna and stay within sort of safe limits of mercury intake. There are some good websites out there. If you go to my website at kidseatgreat.com and you look at the environmental issues, I'll have some links there for environmental toxin websites that you can look at. And there's some websites that have done some really good stuff on fish and sort of what's out there. The other thing, though, is you talked about the salmon. One of the things that's interesting is that the farm salmon tends to have more toxins in it than the wild salmon. And that's because they're bred sort of in a single environment. They also are lower in omega-3 fats, because they're not feeding a natural diet. They give them unnatural diet, an artificial diet. And in the farmed salmon, they found that there were more chemicals like PCBs, for example. So I try to encourage people to use fresh, you know, wild salmon when they can. And one of the things that this speaks to is the fact that we've sort of gotten used to be able to getting food all year round. And many of these foods we have to recognize are really seasonal. And we've just changed the way we grow things and the way we can produce things, the way we can ship things. And it does raise some questions because some of these foods, I don't know if you've had this experience, but you go and you get an apple in the middle of winter and you bite into it and it just doesn't taste very good. And you're thinking, you know, it's just not seasoned for that type of thing. So you do sort of have to think about that. And one other issue I sometimes touch on is the pesticide issue. And, you know, buying maybe more organic foods. If your kid's really stuck on certain fruits or vegetables, really think about buying more organic for your child on that. And on my website, I have also links for more information on the whole pesticide issue and websites that you can do a little more research on.
Oh, good. And what about, I mean, we're talking a lot about foods, but I guess, you know, there's also the issue of creams that we put on our, like sunscreens and different creams. I've been reading a lot about parabens lately that are a chemical preservative that one article said that it has been found it concentrated in cancerous breast tissue, which was very alarming to me because I do have a history of that in my family. And should we be concerned about the chemicals of topical products also?
Sure, yeah. I mean, our skin absorbs these things very, very well. And parabens have been recognized as a preservative to be able to use in products that are applied to the skin. And there has been some questions raised. I don't think the jury's in yet on that whole issue as to the, you know, safety of using these and what other kind of alternatives there are. You know, on my website, I will have some information there about for, you know, mainly adults, but, you know, skincares and products without parabens that they could research and look for. Because I think it is something that we just all want to do whatever we can to lower our risks of some of these things because there are so many toxins out there. And it's not just the parabens, it's the pesticides, it's the air pollution, it's the ozone, and, you know, how this all adds up. And that's one way, one thing that I think parents can also be proactive about is giving their kids a really high-quality vitamin because these are the types of things that will basically help them fight some of these nutrient deficiencies that they have and also to help maybe neutralize some of these toxins that these kids are exposed to. And again, on my website at kidseatgreat.com, I'll have a little article there that your readers can download about what to look for in a vitamin because it's a tough question. And I think there has to be a certain components and standards and there's certain things that I look for in a pharmaceutical grade type vitamin.
I'd love to have you back to talk about that topic as well because I know you have some great stories about times that you've had patients come into your office and you've given them nutritional prescriptions, you know, rather than medicines.
But
you've had them actually take vitamins and had some amazing recoveries.
Yeah.
And I absolutely want you to share that with our listeners. But we're out of time. So thank you very much for being
very
on
welcome.
My show, Dr. Wood.
Thank you for having me.
And will you come back again?
I would. I would love to. And like I said, I'll have all this info on my website at kidseatgreat.com for your listeners.
That's kidseatgreat.com. Thank you very much, Dr. Wood. I want to thank again Dr. Christine Wood for helping us to get to the heart of how to create good eating habits for our children. You'll find more information on my website, www.theheartofit.com. And that's spelled H-A-R-T, theheartofit.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join me again for The Heart of It.